hold on to your butts. It's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die. Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. Welcome back to Destroy All Culture, episode 122. I'm Adam P. Nave, and as always, with me is Aiden Morgan.
I've got dairy in my coffee.
I would just like to point out, because now we have to talk about all the openings, I guess, that I was like, okay, I have a new way to do this. It'll make sure I get the names right. Ooh. And I did that long enough that I forgot the rest of the opening. Like, I'm like, welcome back, it's episode whatever. I forgot all of that.
that's hence
the, like, weird pause. Anyway, so it's an interesting little pop culture-y week, I think, this week.
I do agree.
As we slide into the dead zone.
Right, the dead zone of Yuletide celebration.
Yep. But, I'm trying to think. Where should we even begin?
Where should we begin? I mean, we could begin with The Good Place.
We could begin with The Good Place, which, holy shit! Oh my god, if Darcy Kaden doesn't get some kind of nomination.
Right. It's funny, I was reading a piece, might have been on the AV Club, or some similar site, in which they'd sort of looked at how much screen time Kaden got in this episode. Because you have to have, for the purposes of getting, like, you know, a Best Supporting Actor Emmy, you have to have a certain amount of screen time.
Sure.
And they figured she had more than 40 minutes of screen time within 21 minutes of television.
Sure. Yeah, no, when you add that up. You know, her impersonations, I thought, were interesting. Because, like, the Jason and Chidi ones were spot on.
Yes.
The Tahani one was okay. And the Kristen Bell one, she just couldn't quite nail.
You know, at first I thought that. But when the first couple of lines. But as soon as I realized who she was imitating, it clicked into place for me.
Right. It was obvious who she was doing. Like, it wasn't like it was a stretch.
Yeah.
But just the other ones were so good.
Yeah, I think so.
There was in Bell's. I think it's so much of Bell's acting is actually her face.
Mm-hmm.
That you can't just do the physicality and the word choice.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, yeah, it's a very. Like, the other characters are I think they're a lot easier to hit because they're a lot broader, but the whole point of Eleanor Shellstrop is that she really is an everyman. Like, she's very much like everyman. So it's the most grounded and naturalistic performance, so it's the hardest to imitate.
But, I mean, again, it's still just astounding levels of work.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, apparently they worked it out. They had the cast, like, run through the lines and record that, and then Kaden watched like, you know, them do the lines a thousand times or whatever until she was able to like sort of imitate all the actors properly.
I'm like, did they call the Orphan Black team at any point? See, that would have okay. Now again, as much as I love Darcy Kaden, like, that would have been the amazing move, is to have hired Tanya Mosley just for one episode. To play all the characters?
That would have been highly funny.
It wouldn't have worked for the show, but it just would have been one of the best in-jokes of all time.
Yeah, it would. It's like, wow, that was... You went there, we would have said, of the good place. Yes.
But, that, and of course, Danson continues to just shine. Holy crap. Like, just his whole... Just, I don't know, thing, like... The character of Michael has become sharper and sharper drawn throughout the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true.
Just a joy. And of course, we're finally in the actual good place.
But it took a long. Apparently, there's a committee that is referred to. So perhaps they're going to find the committee to discuss it. But
well, I mean, there are only three episodes left. In the season.
That's true.
But they do have their renewal for season 4.
Oh, good. Good. So we've got that in the pocket. That is very cool.
Yeah, they announced that, like, not, like, I think
a day or two right before this episode.
Hmm. So even
which
if
is
even,
a nice thing.
Yeah. So even if Netflix takes away all the Marvel shows, we will the Good Place will be.
No one will care, and they'll still be the Good Place. The Marvel thing, by the way, that has come to light what actually happened.
What has actually happened?
Okay. So, Netflix pays a portion of the money to make the shows. Marvel pays another portion.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel makes X amount per show, and so does Netflix, right? Because, like, you know, the way the magic math that Netflix uses.
Right.
For, like, how many streams and all this. Okay. A, ratings have been going down on all of them. Keep that in mind.
Yes.
Netflix wanted to drop the number of episodes per season down to, like, 6 or 8.
Hmm.
And Marvel didn't, because they were like, well, at that point, we make so little money off of them because of the split, it's not worth it to do them. And neither side would budge. And so basically Marvel was like, well, then we don't know that we want to do this. And Netflix is like, well, then, okay, then we're not doing them.
Huh.
Is it just all came down to that money split and the fact that, like, Netflix, like all the viewers, wanted shorter seasons. And, but Marvel just didn't want to take the monetary hit because they don't have to.
Fair enough.
So they yanked them. And of course, even if they keep the same actors in the same roles, because of, I mean, the fact that Netflix owns stuff, they'd have to start the shows over.
Mm.
They can't use the continuity, they can't use the stories, because all those stories are co-owned by Netflix.
Gotcha. So they'd have to, they just have to scrap it all and build it back up.
Right. Well, what they could do, of course, is, and the precedent for this is, weirdly, Army of Darkness, Evil Dead.
Oh.
If you don't know that madness.
Oh, right.
There's the producers for Army of Darkness own a piece of Army of Darkness, but they don't own Ash or Evil Dead, which is why, like, the Ash versus the Evil Dead show never references Army of Darkness, because they'd have to pay them.
Oh, okay.
It's why all the Evil Dead stuff going forward acts like Army of Darkness never really happened. They'll kind of hint toward it, but that's all they can do without owing someone else money. So theoretically, if Marvel's like, well, we're going to do TV shows, and we really like, you know, Charlie Cox, they could bring in Charlie Cox's Daredevil. Never reference anything that happened, but act like it still happened.
Mm.
So long as they don't directly reference it, they could kind of get away with it. It's a weirdness.
That is weird.
Well, this is something that actually, if you work in comics, you're familiar with in a weird way.
Yeah.
Because if you, let's say you get hired to draw Captain America, right? You, as the artist, you own your art, but you don't own Captain America.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
But your art is of Captain America.
Right.
So you can sell the art because the art itself is yours. But you can't legally do new art based off of it with Captain America in it.
Hmm.
Same thing with, like, your script. You know, like, I wrote a script for a DC thing. I did that issue of Sensation Comics with Wonder Woman. Legally, I still own the rights to that script.
Right, but you don't
but
own Wonder Woman.
But I couldn't do anything with it. Right. I don't own any of the characters or settings in it. That's all property of DC.
Yeah. You could not come up with a comic called The New Adventures of Wonder Woman and Big Barda.
Right. So it's one of those weird, like, legality issues of, like, well, yes, technically you own this. You can't do anything with it, but you own it. And it's just for, like, copyright purposes and all that. Like, it's a weird legal gray area that no one really cares about because it doesn't come up.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not something that anyone has to deal with. And that's why, like, I had to go back to, I was trying to figure out, like, well, this has happened before. And I had to go back to Army of Darkness because, in general, this doesn't happen.
Right.
So the only other place I can think of this happening is, in fact, the Hulk deal, now that I think about it, with Marvel.
Oh, right.
Where Universal owns, get ready for this one, they don't own any production percentage of Hulk. But they own distribution for a Hulk movie.
Jesus Christ.
So Marvel can use the character in anything they want without any sort of clearance. But they can't do a Hulk movie because if they do, Universal gets to distribute it, not Marvel and Disney. And they don't feel like paying out the money to buy that back, if Universal was even willing to sell, which they'd be stupid to do.
Mm-hmm.
and they're not willing to give them a cut because why? You know, their view is why should we?
Right.
Pay them anything when we could just use the Hulk and just not do a Hulk movie. He could guest star in a movie, like that's how you get Thor Ragnarok, which is kind of a Hulk movie, right?
Right. It's just not.
But it's not technically not a Hulk movie.
Right.
So like they found their gray area to do that. But like yeah, no, every now and then the rights for stuff like that get really weird. It's why the Adam West Batman show took so long to come out.
Oh, okay.
Because Warner Brothers owns Batman. But I think it was like 20th Century Fox or CBS, I forget who owned the show. And that was the problem, right? Someone else owns the characters because they were licensed for this show, but the people who own the characters aren't the people who own the show, and suddenly you get into weird who has to pay who for what percentage, and is it worth it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, to them to pony up the money. Like, the Spider-Man deal with Sony was worth it to Marvel.
Well, obviously, yeah.
But they also won't help Sony out with others, like, and we'll talk about this movie because I know you just saw it, they wouldn't help out with Venom. And Venom couldn't have Spider-Man.
Right, exactly. And it's funny, actually, how they got around that. Speaking of Venom, which I just watched, it really didn't need Spider-Man, as it turned out, because they opted for making Venom and Eddie Brock the heroes. Like,
right.
He's the hero of the movie, and he's sort of, you know, where it's kind of an anti-hero, but so Venom has to go from being just this, you know, evil alien symbiote to coming around to Eddie Brock's point of view.
Right. And even with that, though, Sony could do Into the Spider-Verse, which I can't wait to see next week.
Woo.
But they can do a Spider-Man movie without any Marvel stuff, so long as they're not casting Tom Holland. And right. Interfering with that continuity. They could do other Spider-Man stuff. And of course, you do it in animation because you don't want two Spider-Man. That would get weird.
Yes.
And I don't know if actually they could. But they could do animation. And already, supposedly, like, the Spider-Verse stuff has, like, two sequels coming. Like, one direct sequel and one spin-off of, like, just some of the female characters and some other female characters from the Spider-Verse stuff.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, with Gwen Stacy.
But rumor has it,
so
like,
on.
They're already folding in, like, the Venom continuity as one of the alternate worlds.
Well, here's the funny thing is that at the end, like, I went through the end credits because I thought, oh, there's going to be... So there's one sort of sequel with Woody Harrelson, who's going to
right.
be... Carnage.
He's gonna be Carnage.
It's
yeah.
really bizarre because he's wearing the most batshit.
I've heard like this Ronald McDonald wig.
Yeah, it was, you know, because you just don't really see him. Like, you know, Brock goes to see him in a cell, and then he sort of turns his face around, and I'm like, oh, come the fuck on.
Right.
But it's clear that Harrelson was like, I am gonna like make the most out of my 2 minutes on screen here, and then after that. It suddenly gives you a scene from Into the Spider-Verse. And it literally, like, cuts to, like, you know, animation and says, meanwhile, in another universe.
Right. And
so, yeah, so it's all... It's like
right,
the expanded
because this way,
Sony
and like the,
Spider-Verse.
Right, and that's the thing. It's like, they, you know, they can pull in the next Spider-Verse thing, they can pull in an animated version and get Tom Hardy to do it of this Venom.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, no, some of the legality stuff is just bizarre. And we'll just fuck with you. But past that, how was the play, Mrs. Lincoln? How was Venom?
You know, it actually turned out to be a better movie than I thought it was going to be.
Nice.
But it really does feel like a throwback. Like it does not play like a modern superhero movie at all. Of the DC or, you know, Marvel cinematic universe size, it really feels like something from maybe from the 90s or maybe even like a mid 2000s superhero movie.
Right.
So
can be fun.
Yeah, exactly. And that's actually kind of what made it fun was it already had kind of a nostalgia value, like you know the plot, the everybody, it was all very, very, very predictable. Like, you knew exactly, like, as soon as you started watching, you could see the entire movie play out, and you knew what it was going to be. And it was exactly what I thought it was going to be.
Sure, I don't know if anyone goes to see Venom for, like, the surprising plot, to be fair.
Nope, nobody goes to, I hope not. It's one of these films that's not, it actually makes no bones about what it is. And I think that's probably part of the reason why it did so well. And also, my favorite, a motorcycle chase scene in which it cut away fairly often to these, like, slow motion wide angle shots in which somebody who was clearly not Tom Hardy was riding a motorcycle through some explosions. I mean, this is not a criticism. It's like I felt like it was just part and parcel of the Venom movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I do intend to see it. I'm just waiting for, like, a home release here, you know.
It's on iTunes, so it's gonna be
right. I tend to shun iTunes stuff in general.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So I'm just, like, waiting for, like, Netflix. They're like, I know it's on disc on, like, the 18th.
Mm-hmm.
If I feel like going all in, which I don't think that I do. to be fair.
Fair enough. Yeah, no, I think, I'm not going to say hurry to your nearest outlet to rent or stream Venom today.
But when you do, it'll be fine.
But when you do, it will be a decent enough 90 minutes of your time. Also, I thought it was bizarre the runtime when I started playing it was like almost 2 hours, and I thought, this is not a 2-hour movie. There is no way they can get 2 hours out of Venom. And it turned out they actually got like exactly 90 minutes, and then a very
with
long
the credits
credit
and the post credit bumps and the
I mean an entire scene from Into the Spider-Verse. So yes. By the way, I didn't realize this. Peter B. Parker in Spider-Verse is voiced by Jake Johnson, and
yes.
Looks a bit like him. And
you didn't? Okay, I actually got paid to write an article. Believe it or not.
Oh.
For one of those, like, geek-type sites. Weirdly, the only thing I got to do for this site, because the editor who I knew, who hired me, then left. Not because of that, but, you know, kind of because of that. No, when they first dropped the very first trailer, I was like, holy shit, that's Jake Johnson. And I actually wrote an article, which I'm pretty sure you can still find. Let me see if this Google search works.
Yeah, no, I somehow didn't know, and then you hear him talk briefly, and it's just a couple
okay,
of words.
If you just
like,
search
shit.
Peter Parker Nick Miller, the first hit is my article.
Oh.
On geek.com, which is Spider Nick, with great power comes a lovable dirtbag.
Peter Parker.
And I just
Nick
go on
Miller.
To explain how basically Peter Parker is in fact Nick Miller. I had a lot of fun writing that, actually. So y'all should go find that and read this.
That is pretty great.
But yeah, I spent like a good like 1,000-odd words explaining that Peter Parker is actually Nick Miller, and this makes perfect sense.
Yep, that makes perfect sense
to
me.
They also apparently had a lot of fun with like this Spider-Man, this Peter Parker, is kind of the Tobey Maguire Peter Parker.
Oh.
Like if you look at the trailer... Where they're like, you know who I am type of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are a bunch of scenes that are kind of from the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man movies, but they're all slightly different.
Oh, interesting.
Just slightly. So it's like one of these, it really isn't because it's from a different universe, but also it kind of is.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Which is a fun game.
Oh, yeah. So now I'm going to go see Into the Spider-Verse. I'll probably come home and watch Spider-Man. The Maguire Spider, just for the fun of it. Huh.
Yeah, like, I heard, like, things like, I think, like, they do the upside-down kiss, but, like, Mary Jane is upside-down.
Oh, yes, I saw that. Yes, I remember this now.
Right, like, you know, they have him stop at the train like he did in Spider-Man 2. They have, like, the restaurant scene, but it's different. Like, they just, they kept playing that kind of, it's what you remember, but it totally isn't.
It isn't. Cool.
So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to that movie. I feel like the only person who hasn't seen it, because I know so many people in comics who managed to get the screeners. Oh, like, yeah. I think I'm, like, one of the only, like, five people I know in the industry, like, in Portland, who haven't seen it yet. And I'm like, yeah, some of us have to wait for it to come out, dicks. Like, come on. Invite me or something. I don't know.
Anything. Just do it.
But, oh, also this week, and kind of weirdly speaking of Spider-Man, in a weird essence, Flash had its 100th episode.
Yes.
Which was, if you didn't know, directed by... what's his face?
Is that Tom Cavanagh, director?
Yes, Tom Cavanagh. Yeah. I don't know why his name escaped me for a second. And it's actually a weirdly, like, there's a lot of different wells in it.
Hmm.
So, like, he really had to stretch to do this. But, you know, the plot is, it's 100th episode, so, like, you always want the, we're gonna go and look back at things, right?
Right.
But this being The Flash, they're going to literally go back in time.
Of course.
And so they hit, like, a moment from, like, season two and season three and season two and season one, of course. And it deepens everything in the show. Like, they had a lot of fun with it. And it was really actually a fun episode. I think one of my favorite things was the season two bit where they go back in time to when, if you remember, Wells had Barry, like, tied up. And it was very much like, you know, this is, he's the Reverse Flash.
Oh, right, yeah.
And, but, like, it's a Barry that's gone back in time to try to get help from Wells, if you remember that bit.
Yes, yes, I remember that.
So he has, like, the future Flash tied up because he doesn't want him to see the... Except now there's a third Flash in that scene. And, like, they work on the edges so, like, it doesn't interrupt anything, but it just, it makes it all, like, just funnier and deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And there are weird moments that are kind of... If you would actually, if these moments had existed when they happened, they'd be great foreshadowing.
Mm.
But now they work as, like, foreshadowing that's just very obvious, because, like, you know where this goes.
Yes.
It's retroactive foreshadowing, which is kind of bizarre, and thank you, time travel shows.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, the episode. So yeah, that definitely happened. And actually, speaking of time travel, when does this air? I think before we record the next episode, maybe. Let me just double check. There we go. December. No. Okay. So don't forget December 20th.
Mm-hmm.
So another, like, you know, like a few weeks from now.
Cool. Yes. Yes,
we will indeed get the Timeless movie.
Right. Oh, I am looking forward to that.
Which I don't think I'll see on when it airs because I will be watching Aquaman.
Oh, I am not sure whether I am going to watch Aquaman. I'm going to need somebody to
I will
watch
let you
it
know.
For it for me. Thank you, I appreciate that.
I have some friends who want to go see it, and I was like, you know what, this looks like the dumb, like, just dumb, but it looks like it's dumb in a fun way.
I certainly expect so.
And again, it's going to be exactly what you think. You know, it's like, it's an Aquaman movie. But again, like Venom, like, that's not a bad thing. So, we'll see. Yeah. What else happened? Oh, Legends is had its first of its little two-part...
Right.
Thing.
Thing, yes. That was pretty damn good, I thought.
Yeah, I liked... I mean, all the character... Like, the one Mission of the Week, which was just silly.
Yes, extremely
you know,
silly.
We have a Chucky situation.
I sometimes forget that, like, their Missions of the Week can be so goofy. And
right.
You just kind of completely forget about them when you're trying to remember what happened on the show. But, I mean, it did give us, of course, the Martin Stein, you know, therapy puppet horror scene, which...
You know, whenever I feel like the Mission of the Week is getting goofy, I remember that one of the co-creators of Chuck works on Legends.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, suddenly it makes way more sense, doesn't it?
Yep, it sure does.
But, and again, I like that they found the way to, like, let's fuck up time. And it really was just Constantine is very bad at this.
Yeah, I know.
And it was still heartbreaking. Forgot, like, that's the thing, it's like, Matt Ryan sold the shit out of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that whole thing was Fantastic. I also like that they run into like Marie Laveau in the past, and she sees him with her grandson, and she's just like, "Oh yeah, okay." She doesn't
Right. She's just like, "Oh yeah,
pass
you're Constantine." Like, and that's like it fucked me up when they
by.
first
Yeah.
go back in time. Someone comes by and they're like, "Constantine," and A, I was like, "Wait, aren't we in the past? Like, how do they know?" But it was Constantine's complete like what? Like he's just like, this shit just happens.
Yeah.
That I love that. But it's a loose adaptation of Tinian and who drew that? Ming Doyle? Their New 52 Constantine series, I believe. Where their
Oh,
Rebirth
okay.
Constantine. I forget. It's one of the post-Vertigo Constantine series, so I haven't actually read it.
Right, yeah, exactly.
But I heard really good things about that run. And I like Tinian and Doyle, so it's like I probably should have read it, but it's just I'm old and stuck in my ways. But it's a good storyline. So they're loosely adapting that. And of course, next week we have time being broken, and we have a bunch of different versions of the Legends.
Oh my God,
Now,
I
I will
am
spoil
yet.
something for you that I have heard
Okay.
that is going to happen, because one of these versions, they're all puppets. And I know this because there was a site that actually interviewed the puppets. Like in
Oh,
character.
sigh. That's great,
Because
though.
it's Legends. Yeah, no, there are puppets of everyone. Because it's
Okay,
Legends,
I love
fuck
that.
you, that's why.
Exactly. The fuck it, why not? It's Legends. I mean, just the fact that the episode, next week's episode, is called Legends of Two Meow Meow.
With, of course, Zari being turned into a cat, this now makes sense.
Yep, exactly.
Well, what's funny
So.
is that, again, before this, everyone thought that that episode was a big clue that the big bad of the season was going to end up being Clarion the Witch Boy. Because he has his cat familiar.
Right. Oh,
And everyone's
jeez.
like, well, magic and Constantine, and who could this be? And it's like, well, why not Clarion? Because, we have Legends of Meow Meow, and Clarion would make sense. He'd be a good villain. Because he's like a kid. Who's a pain in the
Right.
ass, right? Like,
Yeah,
so, like, Clarion would
exactly.
be great. It's not Clarion. it is, if anything, Neron, which it's, I guess, a newer version of Neron that they're using now.
Yeah, because I was looking at when they were talking about Neron, that doesn't resemble like the Neron from the or some parts of the storyline that it seemed to be
Right, from the
referencing.
90s,
So
which is what I'm familiar with, yeah.
yeah, exactly. So I'm
But
like, all
I
right.
again, it still looks like so much fun. And of course, we had the crossover happening this week, outside of Legends.
Yes.
I did like. Did you notice? I don't know if you've caught up. Well, you're not caught up on Flash. I don't know if you're caught up on Arrow or Supergirl.
No, I'm actually way behind on
Okay.
all of them right
Well,
now.
they did something really, really cool this year. Because they're doing the crossover and they're changing all the knights. So I think like instead of like Supergirl and then Arrow and then Flash, I think it's like Supergirl and then Flash and then Arrow or something,
Something
or
like that.
Flash and then Supergirl. I don't know. But they're changing it up.
And I
But you
think the
know how, like,
first
most
one.
years, the show that would lead into it would also have, like, here's the, like, an intro to it? Instead of doing that, all three shows on their, what is essentially their mid-season finale, because the crossovers doesn't count, plot-wise, for, like, the rest of the shows, right? I mean, like, it affects things, obviously, like, it still counts, but it's not like their big mid-season, like, here's our big break in our big
Right.
stories.
Yeah.
They all ended with this, like, minute and a half clip that was the same clip for all three shows
Oh.
that introduces the crossover.
Fascinating.
So if you only watch one show, you're still like, okay, I'm prepared. Which I
Cool.
thought was a nice touch, because it made it feel unified.
Yeah, that is smart.
Yeah.
And yeah, I believe the first Elseworlds episode airs this evening.
Yes,
My
and it's
yeah, my
Flash,
understanding. It's
weirdly enough.
Flash. Okay. Yeah. That is
Which
weird.
makes
Well,
sense. If you've seen the pre-credit, if you've seen that post-credit scene, it makes sense. Because that post-credit scene happens on Earth 90, which on the one hand people
oh.
are like, but there are only 52 Earths. It's like, yes, A, we've already had a 53rd called Earth X. B, in like DC, like they're like, yeah, but like we refer to like Shazam's world as like Earth S for years. Who cares?
Right.
And it opens up this battlefield with all these superheroes dead, and then you see the one who's still alive is actually John Wesley Shipp's Flash. who, crawling, and then the monitor's there, and he's like, you know, you failed, and now everything will be destroyed because of you, and Flash is like, no, and runs off, and they actually play the 90s Flash music. But that's why it's Earth 90, because that's when that show aired. It's just a cute little callback.
Of course.
But with that Flash running, obviously he wants to find another Flash, which makes sense for why the Flash is the first episode.
Very nice. Well, I have to find that.
Yeah, you can find it on YouTube.
Yep. Yeah.
They released it.
Yeah, it's, everything's on YouTube.
But it's actually a really nice little clip. And when they go into the music, I mean, back in the day, I kind of liked that Flash show, but it was never good.
Yeah. No. Exactly.
But even so, when like you see him in the suit, I'm like, okay. But then he starts running off, and like they've updated the effect some, but it's still not quite the normal Flash effect that we know now. It's different.
Oh, nice.
Like, it's kind of between the original Flash effect in the 90s and the new one. But when he runs off, they start playing that Danny Elfman theme, and I was like, oh, that's very sweet of you. Like, yeah. And I didn't realize that my head still knew that music.
Oh, my God, yeah.
That was kind of fun.
Let's see if I can, just while we talk, I'll see if I can find it on the old.
I mean, like, it's a minute 30, so you might not want to watch it right now, but...
Well, there's the Elseworlds trailer, but maybe it's the Elseworlds sneak.
No, it's listed as like an Elseworlds trailer. Weirdly enough.
Okay.
I forget how I found it somehow. I think it is Elseworlds trailer. And it's.
Oh, I think I see it here. Yeah, there's John Wesley Shipp.
Yeah, it's the DC TV Elseworlds crossover sneak peek, I think.
Yep, that is the one. That is the one that I'm looking at right now. Well, I mean, I'm not playing it, but I am right. Seeing the thumbnail.
You will watch
thumbnail.
It soon.
I will watch it soon. There's no chance that it will go unwatched by me, is what I'm saying.
I appreciate that. I'm sorry, I'm kind of, I know you had like a late night. I just finished a novel that was 3 months late. Like, it's been torturing me for 6 months, frankly.
Ugh,
I just finished it, like, the other day, and, yeah. So I'm still, like, and I'll talk to you about exactly what I'm doing, but, like, my schedule is kind of fucky, and so I ended up just taking this weekend off, pretty much. And so I'm at loose ends, because I'm like, what do people do with free time? I don't know.
Can that be, like, a Facebook status, it's fucky?
Sure. They'd probably ban me for it now.
Yeah, probably. And I hope you've gotten all your porn off Tumblr. Remember, kids, to get all your porn off of Tumblr before Tumblr gets rid of it for you. Actually, I think my favorite thing, I mean, I think this is a terrible thing, but my favorite thing about it is the artificial intelligence, their software, that's sort of flagging posts.
Oh, like, Jesus. Yeah, no, the shit it's flagging is amazing.
Cartoon Dragons? Was that... Roberson's kid? It was we'd run some cart. And when you look at it, like I have seen like Tumblr porn that kind of looks like that, but
yeah, no, there's so much that it's just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
So I did do a thing because you know that like I can't. Well, I assume at this point the six people who listen know this. I can't read fiction prose while I'm working on a book.
Mm-hmm.
And usually that's 3 months, because that's about how long it takes me to write a novel. But this one was 6 months, so it's been a while since I've been able to fucking read a book.
Fair enough.
So I decided to celebrate yesterday and go to a bookstore. Now, I have a bunch of books to read, but you know what? Fuck you. And that's my official stance. I was like, I'm going to celebrate and buy a new book and read that book. And I was in one of the smaller Powells last night, because I didn't feel like going all the way downtown.
Fair enough.
And I saw this gorgeous, complete Earthsea. You know, Ursula K. Le Guin's Earthsea stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's all the novels and all the short stories, like even the ones that weren't part of the, you know, originally in the thing.
So, okay.
Mm. With illustration plates by Charles Vess.
Oh, that sounds pretty.
And it's huge. It's this huge hardcover, like has a ribbon. The actual, what made me laugh was the jacket, like the paper jacket. The big hardcover actually had to be reinforced because the book is so big.
Neat.
But it's so big that the spine has Ursula K. Le Guin and then the books of Earthsea, right? The completed illustrated edition. But all the text actually runs horizontal.
Wow.
Right? Like, Ursula K. Le Guin is two lines, but holy shit, like, they fit Earthsea on one line.
So that's a sizable spine.
It really fucking is. like, I was like, holy crap. It's a 5-page, 1,000-page, 5-pound hardcover.
I like the idea of it being a 5-page book better, but right, really, sure, really heavy page.
Really thick paper. But, you know, because I haven't read Earthsea. Like, I actually realized, like, I don't know if I own all of Earthsea. Like, I think I've never read all of it.
I've known neither of them. I've read, like, I think a wizard for Earthsea.
Right, like, I've read bits of it.
Yeah.
But I don't even know if I own it. Like, I think I borrowed it from people. And I was like, you know, do I want it? Because it's like a $60 book.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, again, 5,000 page, illustrated by Charles Vess, fucking color plates, ribbon. Obviously, this is an expensive fucking book. And I was like, do I really want to fucking pay for this? When I'm like, I don't even know if I really love Earthsea. But then I remembered something about this. Mediocre Le Guin is better than 95% of prose out there.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, just, let's be honest.
Yeah, it's likely you're going to get your money's worth even with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I get to dig into that. And of course, there's a season 2 of Ms. Maisel. The Marvel's Ms. Maisel,
right,
is out.
I have not started that yet.
Yeah, I want to, but I've been finishing this book, so I haven't had time. So I'll watch all that this week, I'm sure.
Exactly. I've heard gripes amongst reviewers, but I just think that it's partly because the first season just set the bar so very, very
high. Well, most of the gripes I've heard so far have been one of these, like, oh, they're doing this, like, weird stereotypes of, like, you know, Jewish culture that don't really exist. And I'm like, really? Because, like, there were things, like, apparently they have, you know, they do Yom Kippur, and they do, like, a whole New Year's thing. And they're, like, they're saying New Year's in English a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And they're not really acting like it's Yom Kippur. And I'm like, welcome to New York Jews. Like, frankly, like, this reminds me of my family.
Right.
And so it's weird when people are like, it's a stereotype, and I'm like, you know, and they're not treating it with respect. And I'm like, right? And?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Amy Sherman Palladino is not treating New York Jews with respect. Fuck you, next.
Well, but I understand, like, where they're coming from. But again, like, if you have relatives, like, Jewish New York relatives of this age, you're like, no, that's totally what happened for a whole bunch of them. Obviously not all of them. But there's also a bunch of weird, like, racist stuff. And very problematic stuff, but it was completely correct for the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things of like, yeah, but do you still want to do it? And that is a valid conversation to have.
Sure.
Because they don't treat it like it's at all problematic.
Gotcha.
And so there's like, there's that weird, weird gray area of like, well, how do you deal with this stuff? And it's Palladino, so she doesn't care. She just runs forward.
Mm-hmm.
Which is fine. But, you know, the season has Zach Levy in it, apparently, so I'm all in. God knows I love that first season.
Oh, yeah, no, me too. And I think even like a second season, I mean, the other thing, the other gripe that I've heard is that it often seems in some ways to replay a lot of the conflicts from the first season, but for to diminishing returns. But really, I don't really care. I mean, I'm kind of in it for the dialogue. I'm in it for Brosnan's stand-up comedy,
right,
scene, and just these like recreations of that world.
It hasn't been that long. I mean, the thing's like the first season's 8 episodes.
Yeah,
these people aren't growing and changing. Like they're just on the cusp of growing and changing, and that takes longer than people want to admit.
Right.
And again, yeah, it's you're in it for the dialogue, and frankly, I still want. Like, I wish we lived in a world where, because, as anyone, you know, like, I love Sorkin's dialogue the same way I love Palladino's, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You go to their shit for the dialogue, for the rhythm, for the sound of it.
Yes.
But Studio 60, which proved that, you know, Sorkin can write funny, but he can't write sketch.
No, he can't.
Because they're two different skills.
Yes.
The fact that Palladino could find a way throughout that first season to turn what she normally does and heighten it just like 2 degrees and get stand-up out of it.
Yeah.
And like, you know, a bunch of the Lenny Bruce stuff they did, of course, were actual Lenny Bruce bits.
Yeah, that's right.
And you realize how much that must have, like, because her father was in the comedy scene, I believe. Like, and hung out with comics and all this in the 50s. That's where she gets a lot of this from. But how much of her own dialogue is influenced by things like Lenny Bruce's delivery.
Hmm.
Because it fits her dialogue.
Hmm.
And it's like, oh, okay, that's where you're getting some of these padding from.
Yeah.
Which is just interesting.
Yeah, that is true.
So,
yeah, I mean, can you imagine how devastatingly bad the show would have been if it turns out that, you know, Sherman Palladino could not write good stand-up
comedy?
And I mean, just look at, like you say, look at Studio 60 for
exactly like for that was what we were afraid of, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's where that was going to go.
Well, I mean, actually, boy, it never occurred to me that that might be the case, but man, I am glad it was not.
Well, let's say, it didn't occur to me that that might be the case going into Studio 60 either, but...
Oh, that's...
Yeah, and of course, Ms. Mates already has a third season planned. I mean, yeah. I'm sure it'll be another year, but whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And this season is like 2 episodes longer than the last one, so hey, maybe they'll keep that up. Not that they'll keep adding 2 episodes, but just, you know, the slightly longer seasons.
Right.
But, yeah, no, it a delightful little show.
It was good. Oh, wait, just as a quick mention, The Gifted.
I've been
keeping up with The Gifted.
Yeah.
It's, I think, like, and I, well, and every time you mention Palladino, I think of Emma Dumont. You know,
me too.
Bunheads. And then my mind goes to The Gifted.
Yep.
And now she's...
Are you caught up?
What's that?
Are you caught up?
I am caught up.
Okay.
She seems to have gone full Polaris at this point, or pretty much.
Yeah, the accepting of, like, her history was like, oh, that's not good. that's going to get, like, we just added a whole new side to this.
Exactly, yeah.
But also, this last episode had the single funniest bit on the show to date.
Oh, do tell.
When, I can't think of his fucking name. I can't even think of character names right now. But when they're like, oh, we're going to go in and kidnap this guy.
Right.
And on the radio, he's like, he gets, you know, open the trunk. He's like, what's even going on? Just open the trunk. And he does. And they teleport this guy in. And he looks at him. He's like, don't look at me. I don't know what's going on either. And just closes the trunk. I was just like, you fuck ups. I love it.
Yeah, that was pretty great. Yeah, I was gonna say more stuff like that would go a long way to like making The Gifted a better show overall. Just because I mean it's a lot of it's pretty. It trades on gloom and claustrophobia because it's an X-Men show, so you get
right.
So I mean there's always that sort of claustrophobic sense that, you know, people are gonna come in and just like. Fuck up your life royally and like sort of, you know, experiment on you and treat you like an object rather than a human. So yeah, humor, you need that here and there.
Yeah, no, and I think the show does a great job. Like it is still my favorite X-Men thing ever on TV.
Weird. I was not expecting that when it first aired.
Me either. And it got me in the first season. With one of these, this feels more like the X-Men than most X-Men things do.
Mm-hmm.
And then this year, it's like they're building it out, and they're not afraid to let the characters be weirdly complex, like the whole Polaris thing.
Right.
You know, Marcos, that's the character's name I was thinking of.
Yes.
And even though he's a new character, like, he fits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like, there is that moment where, like, Marcos even looks at, you know, Thunderbird, and she's like, if you mention the X-Men, so help me. You know, it just...
That was pretty good.
And that's the thing, it's like they're letting the characters kind of breathe and deal with the X-Men, like, shades of gray.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which the show lives in those areas of gray, which I love. But it still feels very much like a fun comic book show. It's just, yeah, no, it's something very special in a weird way, and I really hope they get a third season. And with the Fox-Disney deal, who the fuck knows?
Yeah. Hard to say. Well... Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, and I mean, they need 4 seasons because the titles do eventually have to spell out X-Men.
Yeah.
So, you know. if they don't get to spell out X-Men, I'll, you know, what's going to be? X-Me? That'll be lame.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, hopefully they get to, but.
Hopefully.
Oh.
That was.
Yeah, right now they're just spelling out XM Radio. It's not really great.
Yeah, or, you know, or it might be Windows ME. I don't know, who knows.
Yeah.
What was I thinking of? Sorry, my brain is a little bit all over the place today.
I get you. I'm right there with
but,
you.
But yeah. Oh, yes, right. I saw The Predator.
Oh, yes. Now, I haven't seen this because I've heard not anything great about it.
Well, it's... It feels like there's a good Predator movie in there that just did not make it out of the gate. And I think a lot of it is down to really bizarre edits. I have a feeling that this was there was a lot more in the movie, and they cut bits, and Black had, I think, written a script that did not lend itself well to being sort of cut down,
yeah,
but they cut it down.
Man, it's weird, because again, like, Shane Black, right? Like,
yeah. It's odd, considering how good he is at structuring a movie. It's odd that this happened.
Although I have a theory.
So, okay. But it seems to me that it feels like highlights from a good Predator movie. And I think part of the problem with this as well, and maybe the meat is in the parts that got cut.
Right.
But a lot of it feels like there's a lot of characters in this movie, doing, you know, in a lot of different places, but really there's only one character, and it's Shane Black. Everybody talks and reacts like Shane Black, or like a Shane Black character,
right?
Much more so than in his other movies. Olivia Munn and Yvonne Strahovski are both in it, but they kind of play the exact same person. It's really weird. Like the same sort of like. Sort of seem like Olivia Munn seems like a scientist and Von Strahovski seems like a housewife, but they're kind of free swearing badasses, you know.
Right.
Ta-da. But they do it in the exact same way. And yeah, all the dialogue is the same that way. The one thing I really loved, Sterling K. Brown sort of plays the main human villain.
Okay.
And he is like such a great Shane Black villain, because he has this great vocal tic. Like every time he says something really vile and threatening, he'll like make a bad joke and then emit this weird high-pitched titter.
Huh.
And it is like, on the one hand, it is like this perfect little affectation, pure Shane Black, and you could tell Sterling K. Brown is just enjoying the shit out of it. And it makes the character seem like the utter psychopath that he obviously is. And yeah, high five, thumbs up on all that. So
do you want to hear my theory about what happened?
I do.
Okay. I don't know if you remember, but way back in the early days of his career, they wanted Shane Black to write the Predator movie, the original one.
Right.
And he said no. And they said, well, we'll cast you in it. So they cast him in it, because he is in the original Predator movie.
Right, yes, yeah.
Yeah. And he said, yeah, that's great, I'm still not writing your fucking movie. And they kept pushing, and he kept refusing. So years later, he wanted to do Nice Guys. And they're like, they weren't sure. And apparently it turned out, like from everything that anyone's ever said, that there was a deal that like, we'll let you do Nice Guys if you write this Predator movie.
Oh, okay.
And so I think it was one of these, he kind of did it quietly under duress.
Hmm.
Like, he didn't want to fucking do it.
Hmm.
Which would explain a lot.
Yeah.
So I have this feeling that's what happened.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. Well, that kind of makes sense, because...
Right, like, that's it felt like it was like, oh, that, yeah, okay.
You know, and it could have been like the best movie in the franchise. I mean, the bar is very low for that, obviously, once you get past the first Predator movie. But man, it'll be like a good scene, and then characters will like pop up out of nowhere and then go away again, and it feels like, and I know that they had that one scene where they had to cut because the actor was a sexual predator and a buddy of Shane
right.
Black's, and so that just didn't go over well. So I can understand that, but I don't think that one cut can be laid. You know, the sins of this movie cannot be laid at that particular door.
No.
So yeah. So I wouldn't stop you from watching it.
Sure.
But it's one of these things where you're like, this could have been a fun movie, but just not quite.
Right. Yeah, it's a shame.
It's a shame.
But I've also never really cared about Predator.
No, neither have I, and I'm rather surprised that I seem to have seen all the Predator movies. I don't know how that works, but I've seen them all. Even the Alien v Predator ones.
Huh.
Which are all right, really though. Terribly bad. Also, we were going to... You mentioned Hawk, or not Hawk and Dove, Titans earlier. And
yes.
You said you had some thoughts on the structure, storytelling structure in the show.
Ah, yes. Yes, I did. Well, because again, like, this is... This is the Hawk and Dove history episode.
Yes.
And it's a thing that the show keeps doing, where they keep going off in these side bits, like almost every other episode.
Yeah, I've noticed this.
Yeah. And I'm not sure it works the way they think it does.
You mean is they probably think it works, and
yes.
I'm not sure that it does. I only watched half of the episode. I'll probably finish it up later, but I don't know. It's one of the main things I've not enjoyed about. There's been some things to like about Titans, but one of the things I don't like about Titans is sometimes I feel like there's a group of 13-year-old boys like writing script, thinking, oh, I know what'll be like super cool and edgy. And it seems to come out with the Hawk and Dove stuff, particularly. The first Hawk and Dove episode seemed to be a really dumb take on how adults do relationships. And this seems to be like a bad take on trauma. Because it's, you know, I was watching, I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, great. Pedophilia, random accidents. That's great.
Yeah, I just feel like the Hawk and Dove stuff specifically, I feel like they had this weird issue where they wanted to take the concept of the characters away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no more Lord of Order and Chaos thing.
Right.
And kind of reduce them to they're just some guys like Robin, basically.
Right, they're vigilantes.
Right, they don't have any powers, really. They're just normal people.
Yeah.
Did that, they had this weird problem. Because, I mean, originally, the Hawk and Dove stuff, again, was like in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, it was more, it was all around the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah.
And, you know, Hawk was all like, yay, war. And Dove was like, no.
Hence the name's Hawk and Dove, yes.
Right, and I was thinking, like, you know, Don, the original Dove, was a pacifist, and they had these magic powers where they say their name when they're in the presence of danger, and they turn into Hawk and Dove, and
mm-hmm.
blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, Don dies in Crisis of Infinite Earths in the 80s,
right.
And because the sliding scale of no one ever really ages,
mm-hmm.
and yes, the stuff took place in the 60s, but don't worry about it, you know, because
sure.
it's comics.
Of course.
Then, you know, Hawk meets this woman, Dawn. And she becomes the new avatar of order as the new Dove. Once you, A, pull them out of the 60s, and B, remove all the magical aspects, and C, go, well, we can't have them be... Because the only way Dove works as a pacifist who's also a crime fighter is if you give kind of like the heightened reflexes and all this, you do like super judo type of thing.
Right.
Once you eliminate all that, you're left with just, well, why? Just,
well, and
why?
Well, they've tried to... Yeah, and the... Well, the answer is because pedophilia.
Right.
which
and well,
to me,
in Hawk's case, and in Dove's, it is this like just unresolved trauma of losing her mother,
right?
But yeah, they were floundering. Like you could feel that flounder for what to do with the characters, and yeah. It hurt me especially because the last episode with Donna Troy was such a better show again.
I know that's the thing, right? This is
like how great was that episode?
Yeah, it was easily the best of the season so far.
Yeah,
or the best of the series, and yeah, this one has felt like a real step backwards.
Right, like I don't know how long they're going to keep Hawk and Dove in the show.
I don't.
But I mean, it's Titans, and I kind of do appreciate the idea of Titans because, like, in the 80s, especially, and even in the 60s, like, there were the Titans, and then there were all these other teenage heroes who they knew who kind of filtered in and out of the book.
Mm-hmm.
I like that they've kind of kept that idea.
Yeah.
But at the same hand, you only have 13 episodes. Stop it.
Right. Yeah, that's the other thing. And I mean, and I know that they left us on a real cliffhanger with the last one, and they're trying to start, you know, spin that out a little bit.
Right. And this one actually addresses it in a really interesting way that's like, okay, well, now we have to explain this. Which is fast. By the time you get to the episode, it will actually loop back into the main show.
Okay, yeah, well, I know that we've seen Rachel at one point.
Right.
In the middle of the flashback, which I thought, oh, okay, she's...
Well, because Hank is dreaming.
Hank is... Of course Hank's dreaming.
But it's one of these things of, okay, but, like, and going from the comics, like, Raven's soul self can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But they haven't done that in the show yet.
Right.
So it's like, wait, how is this okay? And that's fine. Like, I kind of, like, from the comics, it's like, I kind of appreciated that we're like, we'll get there. Don't hang on. Like, I do appreciate that.
Yeah.
This is a show, I think, actually, that benefits from the once a week.
I agree.
I don't think binging the show would be quite as good.
No. If we were binging the show, I would not have made it this far in.
Yeah.
I would have signed off somewhere around the second or third episode, probably. But yep. So I'm wondering if I know that they're going to have their own Doom Patrol show.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if they ever want to do a Hawk and Dove spinoff or something.
I think they were thinking of it, and they're trying to see, and I don't think it'll happen.
I don't think so either. Not if this is what they're going to get. I sincerely hope they don't try it.
You know, I just want them to lean in because, like, we're still playing with, well, there's, like, superpowers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Justice League exists.
Yes.
You know, obviously, like, you know, Rachel and Corey and all this, like, you know, there's aliens. We're fine with it. Like, the fact that, like, Dove early on was wearing a Superman shirt says a lot.
Yep. Yeah,
I want them to lean into that aspect of it more.
Yes.
Like, they're right now, they're kind of Arrow leading toward Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And they need to make the turn.
Right.
But they already have a second season, so hopefully they will.
So hopefully they'll see. Well, there'll be more Donna Troy, so...
Oh, God, I thankfully.
Thankfully, indeed. You know, it's funny, the character played of Donna Troy is a photographer in the show.
And
but
in
the
comics.
Actress, and in the comics, that's right. But Connor Leslie, the actress who plays... Donna Troy is also a photographer.
Oh, good.
Like she has her own like photography site and everything.
Nice.
She's very good. It was interesting to see it just because I was like, who is Connor Leslie? So I looked her up and you got her Connor Leslie photography thing.
Nice.
So yeah,
I like that. That's
cool. Yeah. So do I. We are
at the hour.
Heading,
yeah.
We're at the hour. We didn't mention anything about Doctor Who.
Well, again, next week I think it's going to be huge for us just because we'll have the crossover and all that.
Right,
but
we'll be able
if
to
we decide to miss, like, a Christmas episode, because the 23rd, do we really want to do it?
Yeah.
We could try to do, like, an extra long episode next week.
We could, yep, that might work.
Throwing it out there for our listeners.
Yep.
Because we'll have Spider-Verse.
Oh, yeah.
So,
Spider-Verse, we'll have Elseworlds.
We'll loosely plan for that and see how it goes.
Yeah, and we can talk about the whole season of Who.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Perfect.
Because I've heard a rumor about this last episode.
Oh, well.
That there is a thing that Chibnall was lying about.
Oh.
So I'm kind of excited to see if that happens.
Oh, no, I'm curious myself.
Do you want to know? Because I don't know if it's actually going to happen. This is, like I said, just a rumor that I have heard.
Yeah, you can... Yeah, lay it on me.
Daleks.
No.
That's what I've heard, is that he was lying, and that there will be Daleks.
There will be Daleks. There will be blood. There will be Daleks. Well, we shall see.
Right. And, I'm kind of excited to see what he does with them.
Sweet. Actually, and I don't know why I like that idea, but I really do.
Yeah, I just like that's great. And of course, there won't be a Doctor Who series in 2019.
What? No Doctor Who for... Wow.
There is a New Year's Day episode.
Yep.
And that is the only thing we will get in 2019. And then I believe like January 2020 we'll get a new season. Is, I think, the timing they're looking for. But,
well, very well then.
You know, like Chibnall and Whitaker and all that are staying, so...
Right.
It'll be worth the wait.
Huh. Well,
but anyway, for now.
For now.
Oh, sorry. For now. We'll just play some music and wait for more TV to happen.
Let's make that music happen.
Woo! Yeah.